Welcome to the Elementary Librarian Podcast, where we discuss simple tips and tricks to help you take your school library to the next level. And now your host, Jocelyn Sam.
Welcome, Elementary Librarian listeners. Today we're going to be talking about a book tasting, and this is something new for me that I had never heard of until just recently, and I'm happy today to welcome my guest, Jo Nace. She is a blogger and a librarian, and I ran across her website a few days ago, and I'm really happy to have her here today to talk about the book tasting. Welcome, Jo.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Tell us a little bit about your website. And you have a couple of websites, right?
I do. I have a blog called The Book Bug, and it's kind of my chronicle of all of my adventures as a school library media specialist. I started it the summer that I learned that I was going to become a media specialist, and I've just kind of continued it on. And so it's just kind of my ideas that I've been doing, the lessons and things that I do in the media center, and it's also a way to kind of share and connect with other librarians. And then I also have a website called A Teacher's Bag of Tricks, and I started that maybe a couple months before I started my blog. I was previously a computer lab teacher at my previous school, and I was always finding websites and web 2.0 tools that I thought were really cool and wanted to share with teachers, but it was becoming a whole lot, so I wanted a way to kind of organize it, and so I started that website as a way to kind of organize everything in an easy way for the teachers to be able to access, rather than sending out 15 emails every day. Oh, look at this cool website. They could just schedule that website.
Yeah, that's great. That's sort of how I got started also. It was mostly just to give myself a place to sort of store things, and it turned into something just so much bigger than I ever could have imagined. So that's an interesting story about that. Tell us a little bit about you, where you are, how long you've been a librarian, anything else that you would like the listeners to know.
Okay. I am currently the media specialist at a little school in Moreland, Georgia. We have about 480 students. And I have been there for 3 years. This is my third year as a media specialist, but I have been in education for 16 years. I've taught kindergarten, first grade, fifth grade, and then, of course, I was in the computer lab for 5 years. So I've kind of had a mixed experience of different educational background kind of things.
Yeah, different age groups. Mm-hmm. So you've had experience with a kind of a wide range of ages there, which I'd say is good for in the library.
Yes, it really, especially my computer lab experience, really helped me transition pretty easily to the media specialist position that I currently have.
Yeah, definitely. Tell us about, how did you first hear about book tastings? And tell us what it is, because I probably got some people going, what in the world is a book tasting? Because that's what I thought when I first started reading about this.
The kids always have that reaction, too. They're like, what? You can't eat books? But a book tasting is just a way for kids to sample the books, for them to see if they like the book before they check it out. It's just a 3 to 5 minute quick kind of browsing. And I thought it was something really cool I had heard about on some other blogs and through Twitter and some Facebook pages that I follow. I kept seeing it pop up, and I thought, this looks interesting. So I started checking around on Google and looking at some of the blogs that had posted about their experiences with it. And I thought, well, why not try it out and see if the kids here really like it? We had been starting a new program, Cafe and Daily Five. I don't know if you've heard of it or not. The two sisters, I think, are the authors of those two programs. But we started that as a county last year. And within those programs, they talk about good fit books. And that goes perfectly with the book tasting, because you want to find a book that's a good fit for you. And so with doing this book tasting, it really helped kids hone in on those books that are going to be things that they enjoy, but also on their reading level, so they can actually comprehend what they're reading as well as enjoy the content of the book.
Right, and I really like that idea, just the idea as a whole of teaching students to find the books that are right for them, because I think that a lot of times, especially for me, I take that for granted a lot of times. Like, I think that if I know how to choose a book for me, that everyone knows how to choose a book for them, and that's not necessarily true.
But I find that a whole lot, especially with the younger kids. They want to go for those really big books because they want to walk around carrying a Harry Potter, which, you know, is fine, but they also need to have books that are on the reading level so that they can become better readers and eventually be able to really read those Harry Potter books and big books like that.
Exactly. So tell us a little bit about this setup. What did you do to prepare for the book tasting? What age group were you using? I know that you do have a few blog posts about this, and I will link to those in the show notes for today's podcast. But tell us a little bit about that. What age groups have you done it with, and what was involved in getting it together?
Well, the first book tasting I did was second through fifth grade. And I did it in, I guess, February of last year, and it was kind of around the same time as our 100th day celebration. So I was already decorating and setting up for that, so I didn't have to do a whole lot of extra decorating for the book tasting. What I did was I covered the tables in bulletin board paper, a different color for each table, just to kind of make it a little more festive. And then I made the tables look like a restaurant because, of course, we're tasting the books. So I put out little tea lights that I found at the dollar store that run on batteries to make it look more like a restaurant. And I found some fake flowers and some aluminum type trays. And I put the books on top of the tray so it looks like they're being served, the books. So it was really kind of fun, the decorating part. Now, actually gathering the books and organizing all that took a little bit of time, and that was a little more challenging. But I think it was definitely worth it to take the time to pull the books that would be good for those students and to actually start grouping the students according to their reading ability. That's one of the things that I had to work on beforehand. That was part of the planning process.
Right. So did you set up, like, different tables for different reading levels? Is that what you're saying?
For the nonfiction book tasting, which I did first, what I did was I looked up their star reading score because we do accelerated reader and star reading. And so that gave me an idea of what their reading levels were. And then I also pulled books that were around the Common Core for the second, third, fourth, and fifth grade levels so that it would go along with what they were studying, and it would make kind of more sense. They could make those connections. But for the fiction book tastings that I did, which I did this year, the nonfiction I did last year, but for the fiction that I did this year, what I did was I tried to pull books that were from different genres, pull picture books for the younger kids, pull chapter books for the older kids. So I kind of grouped them together not only by reading ability, but also by what their common interests were.
Yeah, I can see, like, a fun application with this also is if you wanted to do that homework ahead of time and sort of maybe seat the children based on their reading level or something like that, you could even make some fun place cards, you know, like something you'd see on Pinterest, maybe for a wedding or something.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of really fun possibilities that really wouldn't take a whole lot of time, but I can't imagine the students' reaction to this. I mean, I'd like to see what they look like as they walked into the library and saw these tablecloths and flowers and, you know, candles and things like that.
A lot of the teachers would walk in, too, and say, hey, what's going on in here? What am I missing out on? So that was kind of fun because then they wanted to do the lesson, too. So it got everybody excited and wanting to get in on the action there.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, it's something that I've never really thought of, but it's something that I also feel like I could implement. And I feel like really anybody could. It's not, you know, it's not really something that would take a whole lot of time or energy to do. So, I mean, aside from choosing the books, that would be a little bit longer. But it's, you know, like the decorating, you could keep it minimal and still, the students will still think it's really cool.
And I found because I was pairing it up with my 100th day celebration, I already had the tables decorated, so that saved me some time not having to decorate, you know, 2 weeks in a row for something. So
exactly.
Able to pair it up with that really helped.
Yeah, you could definitely pair it up with another event or something like that. So, yeah, that's really, really cool. How did you approach it differently for your younger students and your older students?
Well, throughout the book tasting, we go through a menu that I made, and I actually based this off of another blog post that I saw on Mrs. Lodge's library. She had a menu that she used with her, I think it was her sixth graders that she did it with. And I thought, oh, that was really neat because it gave me a way to help guide them through the process. And so the first time I did it, I used the same menu for second through fifth grade. And I realized that might be a little much for second and third grade. So when I redid it this year, instead of having my menu, which had blanketed questions and they just had to fill in, write out how they felt about the book, different questions, I actually had yes or no questions for the second graders to fill in and little smiley faces. A smiley face for yes and a sad face for no. So it made it a little bit quicker, too, especially with the younger ones. They don't have quite as long of an attention span. They can't really taste as many books as I would have liked them to taste at one time. So that really helped doing that with them.
Okay. And those items that you have made, they're on your website, right?
Yes. They are on all three of my book tasting posts. I believe I have a link to the packet that I made. And it's got not only the menus in there, but I've also made PowerPoints for each of the grade levels to kind of tell them what a book tasting is and how to go through the book. It guides them through it.
Oh, that's perfect. My readers and listeners will love that because it's so nice to have some of that work already done for you. So I will definitely link to those posts with that information in that for anyone who's listening. I'm not sure the podcast number to this one yet because I think it'll be number 15. But just when you go on to my website, just click on podcasts and it'll be right there in the show notes for the book tasting show. Let's see. We talked a little bit about the decorations already, and I love that. I love anything that has, you know, simple but effective decorations. If somebody out there is listening and they're thinking maybe they want to try book tasting for the first time, what would you recommend them to do first?
I would say talk to the teachers first to see if they would, you know, if they would be interested in it and kind of helping you because they know their children almost better than you do, what their interests are, and they might even be able to help you kind of group the students by their interest or by their reading level, which will take some of the organization off of your hands. Of course, pulling the books you'd have to do yourself, but any extra help you can get from the teachers can certainly help save time. I would say that would be the first step.
Okay.
And then after you get your groups, it's time to start pulling those books. Look at different types based on if you're going to do reading levels, you know, pull different reading levels. If you want to do genres, then you'd have to pull the different genres. For the nonfiction, I would pull books that go with the Common Core standards for those grade levels, as well as matching up with their different reading levels. And then, of course, decorate and copy your materials and get them ready to use for the lesson.
Yes, those are great ideas. And I think that, like I said before, those are things that pretty much anybody could do with any kind of schedule. Even if you have a really jam-packed schedule, you know, you can probably manage to at least do the book pulling and the book tasting itself, even if you can't put a whole lot of effort into the decoration. Did you notice after the book tasting had finished, did you notice those titles were being checked out more?
You know, what I did was when I pulled the books, I made a special patron in Destiny, our checkout system, and I checked all those books out so that when the kids came to check out, it would say, this book's already checked out too. I think I named it like Books for Lessons, so that I would know, hey, someone's checking out this book, and then I'd override it so that that child could check out that book. Because sometimes after our lesson is over, they'll go and get books to check out, so I might not realize they picked up a book from the book tasting. So that way it kind of gave me an idea how many students were actually getting the books from the book tasting. But, yeah, I would pull a good maybe 50, 60 books for each class, and by the end, sometimes half of those books were gone, and I'd have to pull a few more for the next class. So that's something to keep in mind, too, if you do have the books that are being checked out from the book tasting, you might have to replenish them for the next class before you do the next book tasting.
Yeah, that's true. Something that I hadn't really considered, but that is a good thought that you would have to be ready to replace those books. But that's awesome. I mean, that's what we want is students checking out books that maybe they had never considered or would never consider. So I think that's just really a cool way to do it. It's sort of even like a display, but it's more of an interactive display.
Yes.
So yeah, that's really cool. And I like your idea about making a special patron too, because that's a really surefire way of knowing who is checking out these books and, you know, what's going on with the books that you had pulled out. So
it also takes it out of the system so that if a student is searching for a book, it'll say that it's unavailable. And that way it won't cause a problem if they're looking for that book and you know you're using it for that lesson. Of course, if a student really, really wanted that book, I would pull it from that stack and let them check it out. But it kind of helps the students know, hey, that book's not available right now. I'll come back and check later.
Right. I tried this on a smaller scale earlier this year, not exactly a book tasting, but I did book trailers in my library. I started looking at some of the different books that we had that I felt like students should be checking out, but they weren't checking out. And I found some book trailers online, and we spent an entire day just watching those book trailers. And even that really helps your circulation a lot.
Absolutely.
For those. Yeah.
I found that during book fairs, when you said the book fair videos, those are the books that get bought up really quickly because of those book trailers.
Yes, absolutely. I found that myself. So as we're wrapping up this conversation here, I mean, this has been great information. I think that anybody out there can use this to their advantage to help students to learn to love other books in the library that they maybe have never noticed before. What would you say have been the biggest challenges so far in doing these book tastings?
The time. Time to pull the books, and it really isn't that big of a time challenge, but I would say if there was a challenge at all, it would be, you know, you do have to make the time to be able to not only pull the books, but to organize the groups of students so you can make sure that they are in a group that is going to be effective, so that they can find the books that really are a good fit for them.
Okay, well, that is some really, really great information about book tastings. I knew that when I saw book tastings on your blog that I had to talk to you about it, so I'm really glad that I had the opportunity to do that today. If people have any questions for you about what we've discussed, how would you suggest that they reach you?
Well, the best way to reach me would be through my email. It's jnase, N-A-S-E, 1, just the number 1, at gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter. It's @bot, @bot, bookbug. And @bot just stands for a teacher's bag of tricks. And I'm also on Facebook, the bookbug blog. I have a Facebook page for that as well as for a teacher's bag of tricks website. So lots of different ways you can get a hold of me.
All right, that is great. I have all of those written down, and I will certainly put those on the show notes so that people can check out your blog. And you have lots of other great posts, too. I sort of flipped through the blog earlier today, the Book Bug, and there's lots of really cool information on there. So I hope that you guys will go and check out Jo's blog because she's done a really great job on it.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for being on the show and for sharing this information about book tastings with us today.
It was fun. Thanks for having me.
Today I am adding on a little segment with a special guest. Her name is Liz Phipps-Suero, and I'm very happy to have her. She reached out to me on email about a week ago asking about a campaign that she is trying to get started for some students in her community. Welcome, Liz.
Hi, I'm so thrilled to be here talking with you.
Yes, tell us about your campaign, exactly what it is that you're doing, and how we as elementary librarians can help you.
Oh, great. So my project, the campaign, it's called the Book Bike Mobile. And I don't know if everyone's familiar with this, but when I was a kid, we had something called the Book Mobile, which was sort of like a bus that would come around, usually on the street, and you'd run out and you'd be able to get a book. You know, it's not in our community anymore, and I was really interested in bringing something like that back. Cambridge is a pretty small city, so I live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I work here as well. And I thought doing something on a bike would do well. So basically what it is the Book Bike Mobile will deliver free books to kids, And these would be books to keep. So it's not a lending library. These are books that they get to put their names in and keep forever. And we would deliver them to local parks and playgrounds around the city. And the way that we decided on the parks, we have a really wonderful program in Cambridge where five parks, Monday through Friday, serve free lunches during the summer. And those are the parks we'll be visiting. And the lunches are served through the Department of Human Services. So we're actually working directly with them. And after the kids eat, they and their families will be able to browse the books that I biked over and choose a book to keep. We'll have some literacy activities. We'll have a read aloud. And the age we're focusing on mostly is elementary age children at this point. Maybe we'll be able to expand over the next couple summers. And we are being run basically on volunteers. So it's been a really an amazing response, and I'm so grateful and humbled that people are really taking to this idea. Our funding is coming through a Kickstarter campaign that I began. If you look it up, it's called the Book Bike Mobile, and it will be up until March 20th. And I started that basically to get T-shirts for volunteers and the bike, which was the big money item, as well, of course, books. And we've teamed up with another local nonprofit organization called the Agenda for Children, and I've actually found out today they're going to buy us 1,000 books.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's incredibly exciting, and I can't wait to start.
Yeah, that is really awesome. When I was young, we also had a bookmobile that came into my neighborhood, and I remember that just so vividly, just going in there and finding books and, you know, for people who aren't either able or maybe their parents aren't willing to go to the library, it's such a great opportunity.
I completely agree. And, you know, we have our kids September through June, and I know they're getting books. You know, I'm part of a team who are giving these kids books. And, you know, just like you said, not everyone's able to take a trip to the public library during the day or buy a book at a bookstore. So I also think it's really powerful, too, to own a book and be able to do with that book whatever you want, either read it 1,000 times, write in the margins. I think that can be really powerful for a reader.
Absolutely. And I've come from a school in the past where a lot of our students did not own books.
Yeah.
And so I love that you guys are actually giving the books away. And I like the biking aspect. Is biking kind of a big deal in the Cambridge area?
Yes. I don't know how much people know about Cambridge, but, you know, we're a very green city and we sort of pride ourselves on being one of the most walkable and bikeable cities. So, yes. Bikes are a big thing. And we've got a wonderful organization called Livable Streets here in the Boston area who make the streets safe for bicycles. And that organization is also providing volunteers to bike and read to kids. So it's really exciting. So biking is a big part of it.
Great. Yeah, I love that. So how exactly are you guys going to transport these books on bikes? That's what I'm kind of struggling with right now.
Yes. So that's a really good question. So we're sort of down to two designs. There's a couple of companies that make these sort of utility bikes. And you may have even seen them like in New York City. I know I've seen them delivering or having in the back Italian ices or ice cream cones. So basically it's a trike. And then there's a box planted safely on the back that is sort of welded there. And so the books would go in there. Also, you can get sort of bikes with long frames. And my husband, who's a wonderful contractor, was going to build wooden shelves to go on either side. So there's actually a few options to do it, which is exciting.
Yeah, totally cool. So tell us, my listeners, they're probably wondering, what can I do to help? What can we do to help you?
Oh, if you could visit the Kickstarter page and donate even $5, that would be amazing. Or just spread the word. Or, you know, I think helping would be just to be inspired and maybe doing something similar in your own community, even if it's not a book bike, because it is, it's a lot of work, and we don't all have the time to do that, but having a free bookshelf in your library, I think just getting books into kids' hands, that's really what I want out of this. And any way you guys can do that, and I know you are, you're working hard to do that, that's fantastic.
Great, great words. I totally agree with that. I think there's something that all of us can do to help promote literacy in our communities, even outside of our school libraries. And that's what I wanted to talk about next. I will put a link, by the way, to Liz's Kickstarter campaign in the show notes for this podcast. So be sure that you check that out. I want to talk just for a few minutes, Liz, about I love this idea that you're talking about integrating our communities with our school libraries. And I think it's so important, really, for both sides. What are some other ideas that you have that you might could share with us on ways that we could help our communities as school librarians?
Yeah, I think there are a few ways that we can do that that don't necessarily take extra money or time. And I know as a parent and working full time, even if I wanted to do, say, an after school book club, right, for the neighborhood, it's sort of prohibitive because of all of the other responsibilities I've in my life and all of you have. So I think there are free ways to do this within your day. Something like creating a website and putting links to resources in your community. I know, you know, as a parent of kids in school, there are so many wonderful things going on, but sometimes, you know, there's not one central location to find it. And I think it's a great service a librarian can do is do that. And you can also, you know, put updates about your library, new books and ideas. You know, have a Facebook page for your library. As far as holding events, you know, I do my events during the day, and I don't always have money for an author visit, but I do invite people from the community to come in and read to classes, as well as inviting families to attend those meetings. So we have a coffee every Friday this year in the library, and sometimes we will have special guest readers. So I've had the mayor come in, and the mayor was gracious enough to do that and talk to parents and families of students. We've had the superintendent, the assistant superintendent, a school committee member. So I think, you know, creating a bridge from the school to the wider community is possible without, you know, too much extra to put in. You know, writing articles in your school newspaper, making sure you do go to the school events, and I don't know if I already said it, but working with your public library system, they really, you know, at least my experience has been the public library really wants to be working in conjunction with the school and vice versa as well. So if you can get in with the public library and sort of help them out, they will certainly help you out as well.
Yeah, I could not agree more on that. In the past couple of years, I've really started getting involved with our local public library, and it has been a really good thing for both parties involved. They have come to our school and talked to the students about their summer programs, which ensures that your students stay in the library during the summer.
Yeah.
And, you know, that helps them. It helps them with their numbers and their funding, and it also helps us as school librarians. I have even borrowed a collection of books for my students to use from the public library based on this relationship that I had with their children's librarian. And so that was really good for us also. So I totally agree with that.
Yes, I've had those similar experiences as well, and it is beneficial for everyone and the kids too, because if, you know, families have not been to the public library before, becoming comfortable with that and introducing the librarians is a really wonderful thing you can do for a family and students.
Absolutely. And it also helps, you know, if they have family members, maybe younger brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. get books in those hands as soon as possible and just get the family used to using the services of the public library. So that's something that they can do year round. So I'm a very, very big advocate of doing that.
Totally. And that's actually, that reminds me, something else I do in the school library that librarians can do is I do create family library cards. So when there are those younger siblings and, you know, whether it's drop off or pick up, you can create a time for families to come in and take a couple of books out as well. And that's been really successful. And it's really nice to get to know, especially the younger siblings who will be most likely coming up through your school as well. So anything, you know, to get those books out, that's what we're here for.
Exactly. I love those ideas. Thank you so much for sharing. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for your time. I'm so glad that you shared your campaign with us. I know that my readers will step up to the challenge, and they will help you to get this done in Cambridge. And I hope that you will let us know how it's going in the future.
Oh, I certainly will. And thank you so much for your time. Go librarians. Yay!
That's right. Librarians rock. keep advocating. I love what you're doing for school libraries. And, you know, another thing I was going to mention just a minute ago is I hope that you will also get the news out to your local news outlets, whether it be newspaper or television. That's another really powerful way to advocate for school libraries.
Yes, absolutely. We are in the process of making that happen.
All right. That is awesome. We are so excited for you. And again, I hope that you will come back and keep us updated on what's going on. Thanks so much for being on the show, Liz.
Thank you, Jocelyn. My pleasure.
Again, I thank my special guest, Joan Ace and Liz Phipps Suero today. Thanks so much for listening. I hope that you will give the book tasting a try and that also you will help Liz out if you are able to. I'm always, always looking for excellent guests for the Elementary Librarian Podcast. So if you or another librarian in your area would like to be a part of the Elementary Librarian Podcast, please just come on to the elementarylibrarian.com website and you can go to contact me, and I would love to hear from you. I know that there are so many of you out there doing some really cool stuff. So be on the lookout for my upcoming podcast. I do have some excellent guests coming up that I know you will enjoy. Thanks again for listening, and I hope that you have a great day.
For listening to the Elementary Librarian Podcast, brought to you by elementarylibrarian.com.